This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
For the final time in 2020 from the Trackhall Multimedia Studios just outside Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the final edition of the 2020 season. I'm Jeremy Scott. Charlie Ante joins me, and we're going to bookend this show with him as well. So he'll be at the end of the show twice as nice. Got a lot to get to once again. Steve Wittich from Trackside Online and the voice of the Road to Indy. Rob Howden will be joining me later on in the show. We've got a complete Road to Indy wrap-up and a little look into next year. I'm really excited about Road to Indy next year. As always, Facebook and Twitter at Inside Open Wheel. Inside Open Wheel gmail.com is our email address, and you can also leave us a number on our Google voicemail, 815-714-9260. Charlie, it's been an interesting week, mostly because Gmail has been off and on. I didn't get a couple emails I was expecting to get, but I did get some press releases over the week, over the past week. We do know that Dalton Kellett will be running his first full-time season in the NTT IndyCar Series next year in the four car for AJ Foyt Racing. He pairs up with four-time Champ Car champion Sebastian Bourdais. So that's an interesting pairing. We've seen how Dalton Kellett has run in Indy Lights over the past several years. He had a part-time schedule, supposed to be sharing the ride with Sebastian Bourdais. We saw how that worked out with the COVID-19 pandemic. But now the two are full-time teammates. Charlie Kimball is not going to be in that four car next year. So it's going to be an interesting setup over there at AJ Foyt Racing.
Yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for Kellett to learn from Bourdais for sure.
And we know that Bourdais still has a lot left in him. We saw how well he did in the final couple of races, finishing the top five at the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg, which is his home race. But I think that I've said it when Bourdais was at Coyne, and I'll say it here. Bourdais is going to put Foyt back in victory lane.
That's an interesting prediction. I wouldn't bet against it.
I was right about that.
I would say it's medium unlikely.
But then again, also at the time, Bourdais was paired up with not only was he paired up with Craig Hampson, but he was also paired up with I'm drawing a blank. He's the big tech guy over there at IndyCar. But anyway, you know, that was a great pairing, but we'll see what I think Bourdais can make that car a winner. I wouldn't be surprised to see the 14 in victory lane at least once next year.
Do you know who his race engineer is going to be?
No, I do not. That we don't know yet. So we'll look it up, though, but we do have some other news to get to as well. In F4, Jake Bonilla returns for a sophomore season with Jensen Global Advisors. Charlie, we've both talked about Jensen Global Advisors multiple times. Eric Jensen, he's a lifer in open wheels, so this is a good team for Jake to learn open wheel racing with.
Yeah, I remember it was probably a couple months ago where his team popped up on my Facebook feed, and I was like, oh, Eric Jensen is still around.
Well, if you remember,
the name I hadn't heard in like a decade.
Well, if you remember earlier on in the season, we had Eric Jensen on the show. So,
well, there you go. So I guess he's never left.
No, it's going to be interesting to see what he does. And really, F4 and FRA is going to look really good this season. I think that it's going to be interesting, too, to see who goes over to the Eastern Pro 4 Championship, because a lot of those dates don't conflict. Maybe like one or two conflict. But I'm excited to see this next season in really all forms of open wheel racing so far this year. Also, we did get word from HMD Motorsports of a new driver signing. This wasn't the driver signing I thought we were going to get. But we got notification from HMD and Global Racing Group that Benjamin Peterson will be running next season full-time in Indy Lights. Peterson ran teammate to FRA champion Linus Lundqvist. We're still waiting to see where Lundqvist ends up next year. So Going to be interesting to see if he does well. But I think we're going to see some more signings. We'll talk more about that with Rob and Steve here in just a little bit.
So is that a two-car team for HMD at this point?
Oh, it's going to be a four-car team. But we've got it's going to be two HMD cars only and two Global Racing Group with HMD cars. So right now, we know of eight cars at least that are going to be running. Four out of the Andretti camp, you know, mixed in with Steinbrenner. Four out of the HMD camp mixed in with Global Racing Group. Probably two with Juncos Racing because they've got Stingray Rob and I'm just losing my mind on names. Apparently, I'm glad we are going on holiday break. They're testing two cars out at Homestead Miami Speedway. So
HMD is kind of a funny name because I do a lot of virtual reality stuff. And so that acronym to me is always head-mounted display. I know that's the high quality analysis that you turned to me for.
Charlie Ante, this is why we've hired you as our racing analyst. Nate Arnada, that's the other driver that's in the second Juncos Racing Indy Lights car that was testing at Homestead Miami Speedway with the Academy. We're going to be covering them a little bit later on this year with their winter series when they have their back-to-back race week, I should say, the whole race week where they have a couple races at the Homestead Miami Speedway and a couple races at Sebring International Raceway. I think that's it with the news that I can. We did get some developing news just a couple of hours ago that the 2021 Road to Indy Chris Griffiths test is set for the final weekend in October at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's actually the 29th through the 31st. As you know, the Chris Griffiths test is the final test before the offseason begins in earnest, where you see a lot of the Road to Indy teams give drivers that are in USF 2000, they get to run an Indy Pro and vice versa. This is also the test where the Indy Lights Championship top three are awarded the IndyCar one-day test as well. And that, I think, is huge for the top three in Indy Lights to get some IndyCar machinery test and tasting.
So do you know what the off-season testing regulations are for the different series in Road to Indy?
Right now, I do not.
Because my knowledge is a little bit rusty at this point, but I remember last year that I think, at least for Pro 2000, and I would assume for USF, it was basically that it was open testing, whatever you want, except for like the month of February. So February, everything shuts down. But aside from that, you can do what you want. I'm sure for Indy Lights, it's much more restrictive. Because I think for any time you run those cars, you have to like fly out Cosworth engineers or something like that.
Yep.
And so I'd imagine that's more restrictive. But with that in mind, I wonder what for, because they have the two lower series testing at the Chris Griffiths test too, right?
Yes.
And so I'm wondering, I guess, I mean, not that it's a bad thing, and testing is always always a good thing, but what is special about that test that differentiates it from, like, why bother having an official test?
Because it is the first test that it's the first, quote-unquote, series test where drivers say, for example, You know, I was running in USF 2000. I won the championship. Okay, well, I get to go test out, Indy Pro 2000 equipment. This test has been going on for years, or at least a decade.
I guess. So is it? I mean, I guess it's where. So it's where you won this, the privilege of a test, and this is where we're going to do it.
Correct. And then you see, drivers, if they're staying in the same series, they switch teams. If they're switching teams, mm-hmm. Their contract's up with one team, they go look at another team. So, for example, if I'm running with Pabst, then I'm going to stay in USF 2000 next year. I'm just using USF 2000 as an example. I'm going to go test, over Jay Howard and see what they have, or I'm going to go see if Juncos is going to bring a car since they're, down the road. It's an opportunity for teams to bring on new drivers, you know, drivers coming up from karting. It's their first opportunity to kind of test things out. I mean, some teams have agreements with racetracks to do testing, but it's the test, to say the least.
Fair enough. That's a very good answer.
Charlie, stand by. We're going to be doing our Road to Indy wrap-up here in just a little bit, next on Inside Open Wheel.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Welcome back to Inside Open Wheel. Jeremy Scott here, and it's time for our Road to Indy recap. So joining me, as always, is the voice of the Road to Indy, Rob Howden. And from Trackside Online, it's Steve Wittich. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me. It's been an interesting season, to say the least, in Road to Indy. And Rob, I know you've been part of every lap of that. And let's talk about USF 2000. I want to start off with that because I'll tell you what, Christian Rasmussen and Jay Howard Driver Development had everybody's number those first six races.
Yeah, it was really interesting because I think it was a lot like what we saw, you know, the year before with Braden Eaves, who was able to come out of the gate so strongly and then had that midseason dip and then kind of came back at the end. And it's almost like things were kind of replaying exactly like we saw in 19, because as you said, out of the gate, and I think Steve will attest to this, I don't think we were super surprised that Christian was going to be that good. He was that, you know, he was the top returning driver, three wins in 19, and really just came out of the gate with the same team and was super consistent, super confident. And once he got those wins rolling at that first event at Road America, you know, we talk about the confidence and momentum, it just rolled on through the middle of the season.
Yeah, he that first, I think, what was it, Rob, we figured it out, that first six races, he scored all but one possible point. He had missed the pole once, but he had quickest lap, started on pole, led every lap. He was absolutely dominant, and that was the way he was early or late in 2019 as well. He started to get on a roll, and you could see that momentum and that confidence was there, and it just continued into the early part of this year. And I don't think it caught us off guard, but it might have caught some of the other teams and drivers off guard.
Well, and you mentioned that, and you take a look at the first six races. Yeah, the first race we saw Eduardo Barrichello for show his name for pole for race one. Reese Gold with the fastest lap at Lucas Oil Raceway in the Freedom 75. But other than that, it was all Christian Rasmussen. Then we get across town to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and that's when we see another Barrichello end up in victory lane in Eduardo for the first two races.
Yeah, for me, Jeremy, I think it was the fact that drivers just kind of starting to spool things back up again. And I think they were all waiting for that little chink in the armor for Christian. Like, was there going to be a session where he maybe wasn't going to be first or second, whatever it may be? And it was obviously when we got to Indianapolis. That track, we've never been there in those temperatures to a certain extent. Obviously, a lot hotter in the middle of the summer as it was. Normally, we're there in early May. Or the Chris Griffiths in October. So I don't think anybody really had a strong setup for the track at that point. Obviously, the Pabst guys hit it pretty well coming out of the gate. I think Exclusive Autosport was strong there. We saw that with Christian Brooks as well. But yeah, Rasmussen just kind of hit that little speed bump in the middle of the season. And Steve, you'll look at the results. The first couple of races, even that weekend, weren't horrible. They weren't podium. No. They weren't wins like we expected. He was fifth, sixth,
range, which definitely isn't horrible. But then he got to Mid Ohio,
the third race,
and you know he had a mechanical issue and fell to the back, and that was a horrible result. And that kind of carried over into what happened at Mid Ohio early in that weekend. It was basically three race stretch of just absolute horrible results. And that brought everybody back into the mix. And that's where, you know, you look at this at that level of racing, and it shows how important, you know, winning races obviously is really important. Being consistent is important too. You know, you had someone like Reese Gold and Eduardo Barrichello and Christian Brooks who were consistent and started to eat away into that lead. And, you know, it just shows that you can make mistakes, but you're going to have to win races, a lot of races, if you make the mistakes to win the championship. But it's easy to stay in championship contention if you have a fifth place car. Don't try and do anything without it. Just end up with your fifth place finish.
Well, I don't even think the real chink in the armor was Indianapolis. Obviously, he had those two finishes, Steve, like you had mentioned, fifth or sixth, and then he had the mechanical coming to the green in the third race in Indianapolis, gets hammered in the behind from Michael D'Orlando and has that horrible finish. The chink in the armor was driving off, starting on the pole position the first race at Mid-Ohio, and he drives off the racetrack on the open lap. That was a real chink in the armor that I think everybody else said, hey, listen, maybe we've got to this guy a little bit, right? Maybe Christian's rattled at that point.
Yeah, it was an odd situation. It almost, I remember being there, and seemed like he was warming up his tires, which was an odd thing to do on the backstretch. But yeah, he just must have lost concentration and just dropped a wheel. And he was actually lucky he came back and improved some in that race and was able to get back up to, I think it was a 13th or 14th spot. But, and then, you know, the next race he had another issue. So it's you know, when those poor results happen, they start to snowball, and then it'll get in the driver's head. But he came back in the third race of Mid-Ohio and absolutely dominated again. So that kind of put him back on, at least on the front foot going forward. You know, he had some had to go to New Jersey and fight for it, but he showed a lot going to New Jersey, track no one's ever been to. Teams hadn't really been there. You know, they tested there, but he went, and once again, Jay Howard development, driver development, and Christian Rasmus absolutely dominated the weekend.
Well, and I want to get to, you know, that as well. With, we saw, you know, that middle race where everybody's starting to win as well. Steve, how much of Christian Rasmussen coming back is that Jay Howard, or was it I need to get my ass in gear in order to get the championship?
Probably a combination of all of the above. You know, like having someone like Jay around as a team owner is a huge advantage. He's been there, done that, right? He's a USF 2000 champion. He's an Indy Lights champion. So he's been there. He's done that. He understands that mindset. I'm sure he's gone through the same things that Christian was going through. And then he has an extremely experienced engineer, right? Robin Louis at D'Agostino, who's been there, done that. I'm sure he sort of relied on those guys to help him push through the tough times. You know, like Rob said, IMS wasn't his fault. It was just crap luck. You know, he had a mechanical issue, got hit, had dropped it back. But the other two races, you know, Mid-Ohio were mistakes. And, obviously someone took him aside and told him and gave him some advice that helped him.
Rob?
Yeah, I would think that they probably pressed the reset button to a certain extent, right? Like Steve said, you got a couple of really experienced guys there, one behind the wheel in Jay Howard, who has worked over the last number of years as a development coach and a mentor. Then you've got Louis D'Agostino, who knows his stuff in terms of the car. And I think he probably sat down with Christian and said, listen, we got a great car for you. We had a mechanical error. You just press the reset button and come back and do it again. You know, you draw on everything that you learned last year as a rookie in the program. And Jeremy, you mentioned people coming on midway through the season. That's always what we see with the first-year drivers. They always come in with a bunch of piss and vinegar, thinking they're going to kick everybody's ass when they get here, and they get schooled a bit for the first couple, and then they start coming on at the end of the season when they really start getting comfortable with the car. When I talked to Christian for one of my podcasts after the season, I said to him, and I posed this question because I wanted to get his feedback, and he actually came back and acknowledged it, that really, when it comes to him as a driver, that dip in the middle of the season, the struggle getting down to what? I think he was like 3 or 4 points up, wasn't he, Steve? Something crazy after that big gap. That's going to change him as a driver, that he was able to meet that head on and come back and win a bunch of races and take over and win the championship. I think that for his confidence going into next year, he's been through hell and was able to come out of it, because he could have lost the championship there, but didn't.
Yeah, you find those drivers that have gone through that fight for the championship. You look at a kid like Braden Eaves, and you look at, you know, these kids that had to fight for it, they come out a lot better off in the long run. You look at someone like Rinus VK, right? He won one Road to Indy championship. Damn, he had a tough fight in all three seasons of it. And, you know, it just makes you a little bit more competitive of a driver, and it gives you that, you know, what works and doesn't work for you, right? Like, everyone has different motivations and everyone has different ways of dealing with stress. So as a young driver, you know, look back to when we were that age, you know, you didn't know everything. You know, what you don't know is what you don't know. And they learn and get better at dealing with the tough situations.
And got to talk about, you know, this, you know, as we said, Eduardo Barrichello came in three races, you know, he won. If he continues in the USF 2000 championship for next year, I think he's going to be the one to watch. But I have to say, New Jersey, once again, that was a fantastic race because, A, like you said, nobody's ever been there before. B, I just think New Jersey is a great layout for what it is, you know, in the south part of New Jersey, so it's flat.
but they were able to get some sort of elevation there, and it makes for a good racetrack for development drivers.
I don't know that I'm totally on the side with it. That's just a really tough place to pass. And I think that's one of the biggest problems about New Jersey is it puts a lot of onus on being really, really good in qualifying. And because of the way we played the cards with the tires and less amount of tires, some drivers, held off. Some guys pitted for new tires in race two to get a better qualifying start for race number three. I'd love to see a couple minor changes to that track, or maybe a different layout, because I wasn't overly thrilled with it with the racing that we had, because we didn't have a lot of passing there, to be honest. Now we threw some weather in to make things interesting, but you're right, Jeremy. There were other drivers that stepped to the front. Sorry, Steve.
Can we get sprinklers ordered for,
There you go.
Well, here's the thing. There's also the airport behind there. I'm sure we can get some sort of spray equipment there.
That's true.
Rob's right. It's not the greatest track for passing, but it was better than I thought it'd be, looking at it that way.
I agree with that. Yeah.
And it's a technical track. Like, it's not an easy track for the drivers, right? Because it's hard on tires. There's not a ton of grip. It doesn't get used a lot. There's not a lot of rubber down. It's got some fast flowing sections that, test the driver's confidence and ability to, push the car to the limit. We saw guys make mistakes, right? There's part of what makes a racetrack great in my view is it punishes mistakes and it draws out mistakes, right? We look at tracks like, you look at a track like Road America, everybody's favorite track, right? It's not the most difficult track in the world, but it draws out mistakes. There's so many corners there that you can make a mistake on. And that gives the other guy the advantage. It's about limiting mistakes. Don't get me wrong. Lots of place to pass there. But it's, there's a lot of tracks where it puts the onus on the driver to not make mistakes. And that, to me, as a driver in a development series, is hugely important. Because as you move up the ladder and you go to place, you go to IndyCar, you go to even top level of IMSA, those are the best drivers in the world. They don't make a lot of mistakes, right? So you have to learn that at some point in your career, because there's going fast and there's going consistently fast. And these guys have to learn at a track like New Jersey, you have to go consistently fast, not just be fast one lap, but be fast all 20 laps or all 25 laps.
Can I ask you guys one final thing on USF 2000? Rob, outside of Rasmussen winning the championship, what was the storyline this year?
Wow. What was the storyline this year? Maybe, I don't know. Can you say maybe the development of some of the younger drivers? I throw out the continual rise of Christian Brooks. I mentioned that throughout the season, how he kind of got halfway through it at Indianapolis, kind of got the confidence. He and the team started to gel. You watched him end up going and winning the final race of the season. Christian's a great young Californian. I think he's coming back. I'm pretty sure he's coming back for 2021 in USF 2000. He's definitely going to be a challenger. You had mentioned Eduardo Barrichello. I don't know that he's going to be back in USF 2000. He's already done 2 years. I think if he's going anywhere, it could be Indy Pro. And I look at the rookies, kind of a rookie, Kiko Porto. Again, D-Force Racing is another team that probably didn't get its due for how strong they were this past year. Kiko was really strong. Cam Shields was really strong. I thought D-Force's development as a team in USF 2000, having, getting their first wins in Indy Pro. But Steve, I don't know if you agree with me, but I just think that D-Force's strength and emerging strength in USF 2000 was one of the stories I really enjoyed.
Yeah, actually, when Jeremy posed that question too, I started thinking, I'm like, for me, the big story was, it's always been Cape Motorsports, right?
True.
Yep. And now we've got J. Howard Driver Development, Exclusive Autosport, like you said, D-Force Racing. There's other teams starting to put some pressure on Cape. And I think that's great for the series, right? Like, it's absolutely terrific to see so many drivers from so many different teams winning races. And it makes it that much better and competitive going down the road when you've got drivers that can choose to, everyone basically, if you were one of the top drivers and you had the budget, you went to Cape. Now you've got a choice to make, Exclusive won races, D-Force won races, Pabst obviously is still there and winning races, So you've got a choice to make, which I think is better off for the series in the long run. To put all the good drivers on one team isn't the greatest way to develop the younger guys that need the help. So you look at the guys who were paired with, you talked about Christian Brooks. What he did as a rookie by himself was pretty damn impressive. But you've got some younger drivers that got paired with some older drivers that actually helped those guys out. So the younger drivers out, and I like to see that.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, to our normal listeners, we normally take 15-minute breaks and do commercial breaks here and there, but we're just going to go straight through with this today. Moving on to Indy Pro 2000. I've got to say this. It was interesting to see what Indy Pro drivers were going to run. Sorry, Indy Lights drivers are going to run. Indy Lights move over to Indy Pro when that series didn't even run this year. And I'm not surprised that Daniel Frost ended up with Turn 3 Motorsport, because we've seen the past several years, Peter Dempsey try and build it from a Radical Cup program to now an Indy Pro 2000 program to now a winning Indy Pro 2000 program. We saw that in the first race at Road America.
That kind of, I don't want to say it surprised me. Obviously, the connection between the two of them. Daniel came into the season as a three-time winner. Right, three-time winner. So he was a known quantity, right? And the minute he came out of the gate, won that first race from dead last, by the way, because they had the penalty in qualifying. Yep. He wins from dead last. I don't know about you guys, but I was like, oh my god, here we go. This kid's just going to storm and smoke everybody on the season. This is going to be ugly. It obviously didn't change because he really wasn't in contention after that to a certain extent. But wow, coming out of the gate, it was pretty impressive. Daniel's a great young driver, and when he connected with Turn 3 and Peter, I really thought that, man, these guys were going to storm throughout the season.
Yeah, I think it definitely helped Daniel's development. It'll make him Rob and I have talked about this in the past. Daniel probably made the choice to move up to Indy Lights probably a year earlier than I would have liked to see him do that. But you know what? It ends up working out well, because I think working with someone like Peter Dempsey, who's just, I don't know if there's anybody as competitive and wants to win more than Peter, he's just, that's Peter's personality. He wants to do everything he can to win, and he's going to push Daniel to do that. And he's going to push a driver to do that, which makes him, it's fun to have Peter as a team owner, because you know that my dog's barking in the background. So,
all right. It's live radio.
That driver's going to push hard and be in contention every time.
And then that's when we saw Juncos Racing go back and forth with, Legacy Exclusive. But it was refreshing to see a team like Peter Dempsey's come up to the front and win. Yeah, we thought, okay, season over, Daniel Frost is going to dominate. But we saw a lot of different winners, and especially at the Freedom 90, finally Cody Swanson gets up in the car we've been wanting to see him in and ends up winning that race.
For me, Jeremy, the big thing there was the fact, just the overall feel of it, because we've seen a lot of drivers come from USAC with amazing pedigrees, right? Chris Windham, you go back to the Brian Clausen days, but they always wanted to go from where they were top levels of USAC. They always wanted to jump into Indy Lights, and having Cody jump into the Indy Pro 2000 car at Lucas Oil Raceway for the Freedom 90, for me, that's what these guys need to do. Take the opportunity. It's a lot cheaper to run that race instead of the Freedom 100, which we hope one day will come back. But Cody jumps behind the wheel of that car, and I think that was such a great connection for him, because we've seen guys that run USAC have trouble not being able to control the rear of the car at the speedway if they have some trouble with it. Mm-hmm. Cody said straight up a couple of times he almost lost that car in the race when he was battling with Stingray in the early part of that race. Yep. But he kept his hands quiet and was able to let that car come back to him again. I think that was – I'm hoping that what he did – is a model that a lot of guys will do coming up through USAC, Silver Crown, whatever it may be. They won't look at lights first. They'll look at Indy Pro 2000, because he definitely showed that was a way to go.
Yeah, and it gives the drivers, like, just with that level, they had a lot of testing at that track. He could test at other tracks. It's like Rob said, it's more fiscally doable. Yeah. You get usually before you get in a car at the Freedom, you might get one day at Kentucky or Chicago to sort of get a feel for what the lights car is like on an oval, but that's not anything like the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, right? A bank track is very different. It's for the guys who we said they struggle with the rear of the car, right? They're used to driving off the right front. Now they have to, it's off the rear tires, and it's not like that with the open wheel car. It's a very different driving style, and they have to come to terms with that. And Cody did a good job with that. I was awfully impressed with how he, you've watched his progress through the testing and then into the practice. And then all of a sudden he's qualifying. He's like, oh wow, this kid picked it up quick. Not a kid, but a great story.
And the move for the win. Let's talk about the move for the win.
Yeah.
On the outside, Emmanuel Suleiman coming out of turn number three and four, lap car in front of him. Manuel, of course, zero oval experience, not quite sure where to go. Cody keeps his foot in it, runs the rail, and beats him out of the corner, dives to the inside of the lap car. He's a leader going into one.
That Cody was probably a million laps of oval experience versus right. Manuel. That's probably
so right. Beating,
right? Like, yeah, it's almost not fair because it's much as the car drives different, it's still oval racecraft. It's still yeah. being able, you know, Manuel will not make that mistake again. He'll look ahead, right? It's about that looking ahead and planning when you hit the traffic. So that's, you know, he had to do that. Manuel learned a valuable lesson there, and Cody couldn't learn it from anybody better. There's not many guys who have better car control than Cody. So
that's true.
Triple header at IMS. Excuse me. Triple header at IMS. That's where Stingray Rob just took the broom, did everything but win the pole in that first race. That was all Juncos Racing because Artem Petrov had that win. I think that's right there where we saw that Stingray Rob, as long as he keeps his nose clean, he can win the championship.
I think you got to go back to Mid-Ohio first, because remember we go to Mid-Ohio and Stingray gets his first victory there. And that's the breakout, right? Because here's a kid who at that point was his 49th race in the road to Indy in Indy Pro 2000. He started, never did USF 2000. He came in 2017, the last year of the Pro Mazda chassis. So 49 races in, and you think about not winning 49 races. Here's a kid that was part of Team USA at the Rotax World Championships numerous times. Guy's used to winning races, and it was beating him down. And, you know, he talks about the story of his teammate Artem Petrov winning one of the races there, and he had to go for a walk to kind of center himself and, you know, sat down and made a pledge and then came back and was able to get the win. That then spins off into the race, I think, when we go to Indianapolis, right? I think that's where the success of Indianapolis came, when he rolled onto that racetrack believing completely in Ricardo Juncos and the setup they gave him. And we're like, we're going to win this race. And then after he wins one, it was the next one. That definitely, Jeremy, you're right, was the turning point. But that all was fueled, I think, Steve, from that first victory at Mid-Ohio.
Yeah, I definitely think so. You know, it's Stingray's been an interesting one. His career's been an interesting one to follow. Like you said, he another driver that probably chose the wrong series at a certain time in his career. But it ends up working out for him because he stayed with things. And, you know, when I look back, it's probably not the wrong choice because, with an old car, he came in into a new car. Anytime you can be the first group of drivers in a new car is a really good thing because you have to really help develop that car. So I think that that's something that's pretty important. And I think that, you know, it took Juncos a little bit to get a handle on everything with that car. You know, they obviously won a lot of races with Renus, but there was, I think, they have a better handle with that car now. You know, they were always dominant with the old car. I think that's going to go forward with this car right now. They've got a bit of an advantage. And
yeah.
I'm impressed with what Stingray was able to do, his personal growth, right? Like last year, about halfway through the season, I'm like, I don't know. You know, he always had the potential. He had the pedigree, like you said, the world karting pedigree, but he'd never really shown anything. Middle of last year, he started to show a little bit of aggression and that ability to just put down that lap in qualifying and to make that pass when he needed to. And that carried over, you know, into this year, which is, you know, it's not necessarily the easiest thing to do. And he came into this season thinking, oh, I'm not going to have like the guys who finished second and third in this championship this year would have been in Indy Lights. Right. So he had more pressure on him probably than he ever thought he would. And
yeah.
To go through and beat like Devlin DeFrancesco was going to be in Indy Lights. Daniel Frost was going to be in Indy Lights. To come out and beat those guys, that's impressive to me. You know, they were guys that were ready to move up, and that's, you know, Stingray coming back for another year couldn't have worked out any better for him. He, number one, he won the championship and won the scholarship, but he also got to fight against guys that he's going to be with them at the next level and the next level drivers and race winning drivers.
And I want to go ahead and move on to that next year with Indy Lights. We're seeing the return. Rob, I'm sure Steve, you as well know some of the drivers that will be there that we don't know about, but there are some drivers that we do know about who it's going to make for an interesting feel. We already have, I think it's what, 8 full-time teams already or 10? Am I missing somebody right now, Rob?
For Indy Lights, you mean?
Indy Lights, yeah.
Indy Lights really only at this point 4, maybe 5 full-time teams, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Because yes. we've got Andretti, we've got HMD, Yep. Throw the Global Racing Group in there as well, right? Because they're with HMD. You got Hook Ghost Racing, and then J. Howard Driver Development at some level is going to be there. I know they have at least one car, maybe two cars. We're waiting to hear potential signings and potential drivers there, but it appears that J. Howard Driver Development will be there as well.
Okay, so yeah, four teams. Yeah, I meant like eight cars, but it's still going to be an interesting season for Indy Lights because you're seeing the top three in Indy Pro 2000 moving up. We still have yet to hear where the FR Americas champion is going for next year officially.
Yeah,
it's
right. You're gonna have three champions to start things off, right? Like Stingray and
Kyle Kirkwood.
Kyle Kirkwood and Christian. No, wait.
Linus Lundqvist
is going to be there.
Yeah, I'm excited for this season because you've got three champions. You got drivers who have winning pedigrees coming up through the ranks. Andretti Autosport's back. You have the Steinbrenner name back in Indy Lights. So I did talk to some of the teams. There was some good testing this week in Florida. There were some teams testing at Sebring, some teams testing at Homestead at the road course with the Academy, which, by the way, Gustavo Yakimin doing a great thing for these development drivers.
I've had a chance to talk to Gustavo a little bit about it, Jeremy, and even the team owners as well. They really enjoy it because Gustavo puts the program together. Younger drivers can work with him if they want. Teams are able to come in for a pretty affordable cost, and he puts everything together for them. So I think he's really, really happy. And I think Gustavo posted it out on his social media. Another opportunity, because it's kind of cool, that whole test, a really good cross-section of open-wheel racing, right, here in terms of junior formula, F4 and FRA, the Formula Regional Americas cars, plus USF 2000 Indy Pro and Indy Lights. So that's a really solid of all the racing that's going on.
Yeah, I think it's a really good program that he's put together. And I know the team owners I've talked to, same thing Rob said, right? They don't have to worry about renting the track or getting that kind of stuff put together. They just know, hey, they can show up, pay the fee, and put the car on the track. And it works out really well because everything's shared, right? Every shared costs are a good thing. It's good to see so many different drivers, and it gives drivers a really good chance to test different cars too, right? Like you've got a team now, you've got some teams that have cars in both series, so you can get a driver in a Formula Regional Americas car or an Indy Pro car or a USF car to kind of see where they fit in to a program. It's definitely good.
Steve, it's funny you mentioned that because VRD Racing, which has cars in F4 and FRA, there was a 7-time champion from NASCAR. He's coming to play with IndyCar. He was in the FR Americas car that Hunter Ganey's going to be running in. So what does Hunter do? He runs in an Indy Pro 2000 car. So that's going to be interesting to see if they cross over. I got to pull up the dates. I think there's maybe like one or two conflicts, but it's doable.
There's actually no conflicts at all. I talked to Dan Mitchell from Velocity Racing Development, and Hunter will be there for the entire Indy Pro 2000 campaign.
Oh, that is phenomenal.
Yeah, which is really, really exciting, I think. And for him to be going back and forth, Steve, the amount of second tier experience he's going to have with those two cars is going to be massive. Yeah.
Every single lap of racing is huge in a young driver's career, right? Like as you go up the ladder, the testing gets less and less. So the more seat time you get at the bottom level of the ladder, it's fantastic. And like Rob said, I think there's going to be some interesting additions to the Indy Lights field yet to go. I've kind of got a good hint that if Alex Pironi, have you heard that name, Jeremy?
Yeah, I've heard
the driver. We'll be here. Don't know the team yet. Don't want to spoil too many surprises, but I'm excited to see how he does. He hasn't had a chance to really show what he can do in Europe. He's been with Campos the last 2 years at F3. They're not the strongest team in the world. But you look back at his past, and I think he'll fit in phenomenally well in Indy Lights. He's won at PAL. He's won at Monaco. Every time he's been on a street circuit, he's been phenomenal. So I think that's going to be an interesting addition to the field. And, I think you could see 15 cars at some races this year, which is fantastic.
I agree.
I think if we have 12 to 13 full season drivers, I think you've off to a good start.
Rob,
You're biting your tongue there for a bit. Go ahead.
No, just an interesting thing. I just, you know, Steve putting out a great info about Pironi, and that'll be a great addition. It's, I think, one of the things that a lot of people have been asking about it and wondering, of course, if you're an Indy Lights fan, what happened to the cars from Brian Bilardi's team? Mm-hmm. And this is actually a really good story. I got off the phone with Tim Neff earlier today. Tim, of course, was with Schmidt Motorsports for Sam Schmidt Motorsports for a long time. Guy's engineered a ton of great people. He's engineered guys Villeneuve, I think, back in the day when he came over to run the 500 again. This guy's got a pedigree of engineering. It's amazing. Most recently, guys like Santiago Jurutia. He's done a lot of stuff. Like, I'm talking to Tim. He bought Malukas's FRA stuff, Formula Regional America stuff. So he's going to be running a Formula Regional America's team. Ooh. Tim Neff literally rolled in and bought all of Bilardi's stuff.
Wow.
And in fact, to the extent that he took over the lease of the shop. So Tim told me he is focused on having a two-car team in 2022 in the Indy Lights program, his own team, under what will be called the TJ Steed team name. And it looks like he may be, because he's got those cars. You know, Steve's talking about the fact we may have 15 cars on the track at one time. There's going to be cars that need to be leased. And I would have a feeling that both of the cars that Tim has will probably be leased to other teams.
Yeah, and that's exciting, because I think, you know, you've got someone like Andretti who has four cars. I could see them getting a fifth driver if they had a car and if they had some help. And then, you know, it's going to be an exciting year. You know, I think you've got Ricardo Juncos coming back with at least two cars, and I think possibly
maybe
more
three,
than that.
Maybe yeah, four. Maybe three.
So, you know, there's some definite up potential and with Indy Lights right now. And, you know, I know Rob told me about Tim, and I'll have to give him a call too and give him a hard time, because I had always bugged him about being a team owner, and he never – yeah, it's not something he ever was interested in doing, right? So it's amazing how things change when you get the opportunity to get into that team ownership side.
You know, Jeremy, I think the biggest thing is, you know, obviously Steve and I are doing our due diligence now. We're making phone calls, talking to people, and you can just feel – at least I can feel a tangible – positivity in the Indy Lights paddock and people we're talking to right now, and, you know, and talking to, hearing some of the names of people that are reaching out to potentially find out for rides, you know, a Logan Sargeant, Maldonado, one of the other European drivers potentially thinking about trying to come over here. Those are the names where you start hearing guys from the upper levels of F3 and guys in British F3 that are considering coming over here. I think that's a really big thing, because especially, and we'll talk. I need to get more in depth about what's happening with the Halo, but there's going to be a new titanium Halo-like device for Indy Lights for 2021. I think that's going to be a big thing that'll bring more guys over here.
Yeah, that is definitely something that's important for the European drivers. The kids I've talked to before, you know, in the last couple of years from Europe, that's something they've been, you know, a little concerned about, a little worried about, is the lack of head protection. And now with having that in 2021, it's going to make things a lot easier to bring those top level kids from. Then there's so many F3 series now in Europe that they have to feed into somewhere. You know, there's only so many F2 seats and there's only so many FIA F3 seats. So these kids are going to have to feed somewhere.
Well, and I think also last year getting the announcement that Honda is going to support a driver who wins the FR Americas into Indy Lights. I think that's a great feeder program. Real quick off Twitter, for either of you, can't ask, do you foresee any more driver announcements this week for any of the series, or will it be next year at this point? And Rob, there's one driver announcement I was surprised we did not get. We got one yesterday, but it wasn't one we thought it would be.
Yeah, for what I know of announcements coming out, I don't think we're going to see another Indy Lights announcement this week. I think I know one, I believe, is scheduled for early next week. I think a lot of moving parts still. You know, one of the cool things to see, I know that Rasmus Lindt was in Florida to test his LMP3 car, I believe. Mm-hmm. Also, I know that I'm pretty sure that he has got a little bit of seat time with HMD Motorsports. I wonder if that'll be a place potentially for Rasmus to land. There's all targets point to him being back in Indy Lights again. Because remember, he was supposed to be with Bilardi. So I don't know. This is, I like the way things are shaking up right now for Rasmus Lindt, but I don't know that we're going to get any more announcements this week in Indy Lights.
Yeah, I'm not sure we are either. You know, there's potentially, but I don't think so. Like, I think you've got a team like HMD who you know, they haven't officially announced David Malukas, but we all know David Malukas is going to be there. I don't think they're going to, I don't think that'll be a part of any official announcement. It might be, you know, might be an addition to a future announcement, but you know, I think Andretti's got one more to announce and it's going to be sooner than later would be my guess. But, I don't, you know, like Rob, I don't think there'll be anything else. We haven't heard of anything. Usually I get a heads up on stuff, so I haven't got anything.
Which, by the way, I've got to say this. The best thing that could have happened to David Malukas was him going to FR Americas because he got a good taste of some competition this past year, even though he was pretty fast. He was fastest in that one practice session they got earlier this year.
I just like the fact that he was racing. You know, the thing for him was when he first came in and did a partial USF 2000 season, then he did the Indy Pro 2000 season, then went right to Indy Lights. He was kind of fast-tracking without really getting a lot of the success we saw out of Arenas VK or on Oliver Askew, right? He didn't get a chance to win all those races. Settled in nicely, though, and I think when he was with Toby Sowery in 19 in Indy Lights, that was a really good connection between those two guys because Sowery's he's the veteran driver. Just a big personality, David, a little more reserved, you know, and I think they really worked well together. And I think we saw David come on at the end of the season. And then, of course, we saw what he did, Jeremy, like you said, our one and only Indy Lights session of 2020. He topped that session. And I remember from the interview I did with IndyCar Radio where he was just so over the top about how comfortable that race car was, how good he felt with the team. I remember a complete restructuring of that team in the offseason as well. So new people were with him at that point. His voice and how comfortable he was. I look forward to talking to him after the testing he's done here this week because I have a feeling that kind of comfort is going to continue on. Looking forward to 2021.
Yeah, it's a good point, Rob. He's another year older. You know, he kind of got to race last year without as much, you know,
focus.
As many eyes on him, right? And that I think was a good thing for him. And, you know, I think the best thing for him, best part about last year is, he was with a team that was running a car they'd never run before. And that, like I said before, man, that as a driver development, that's huge, right? Like if you come into an Indy Lights car that's already sorted, you don't necessarily learn a lot. When he went into the Formula Regional Americas car, that's a car that team had never run. He'd never been in before. So he got a chance to develop it and work with the engineer to make the car work for him. And that will only help him going forward.
One final word. What are we looking for next season, Rob?
Where are we looking? What series are you talking about, Jeremy?
Any of them. Throw to Andy for this offseason.
Again, spreadsheets. Steve and I always have our spreadsheets. We haven't seen a lot of names land yet in terms of announcing for USF 2000. But just based on the stuff I'm looking at, there's a bunch of new teams coming in. We've got some one car and two car teams coming in that are brand new. We're going to see a lot of names we've never seen before, and I would not be surprised, honestly, to see 24 to 26 at St. Petersburg. That's what I'm seeing. Indy Pro, I feel like 16, but man, I'll tell you. I think there's a lot of drivers that are trying to find budget for next year. You know, I'm talking to Hunter McElroy and Colin Kaminsky, two drivers, of course, that were very impressive last year with Pabst Racing. I think they're both looking for budget. You know, we don't have a lot of confirmations yet, right? We know that Braden Eaves is coming back, as we said, with Exclusive Autosport. We know that Reese Gold, he announced already that he's moving to Hunkos Racing. Jack William Miller with Miller Vinatieri Motorsports moving up to the Indy Pro 2000 category. But, you know, where is Christian Rasmussen going to land? Is Manuel Suleiman going to be back with D-Force Racing? Steve, all I know for sure is at Hunkos Racing, you guarantee that Ricardo's phone is ringing off the hook to get into that Indy Pro car.
Oh, yeah, there's no offense about that. It's going to be – I didn't. Overarching story for next year is just the strength of the Junior Formula Car Series, considering – and it's for IndyCar too, the amount of cars we're hearing about and the interest that we're hearing, considering what's going on in the economy and what's going on in the world, is really encouraging to me. You know, we had a good season or a good year of TV ratings last year in IndyCar, considering comparative to most of the other sports. And I think that's, you know, there's some momentum there, and it's just a matter of building on that momentum. And I can't wait. Like, I'm honestly, I missed Indy Lights so much last year. Like, I love Indy Lights. Like, it's my favorite series ahead of IndyCar. It's something I've always loved, and I can't wait for it to be back. And I honestly, with the drivers that are coming in, with the names we're hearing, and with three champions, I mean, it's going to be super competitive. I'm talking right now. It's going to be really competitive.
And Steve, really, we love the Indy Lights program, but we've struggled to have the numbers we want, right? It's the amount of positivity and new people I'm talking to. We talked about Tim Neff's new team for 2022. There's potentially another new team. I've been told there's a new team. I can't say anything about it. There's another two-car operation that's going to be in the program in 2022. And just the amount of positivity for Indy Lights right now, man, this is everything we could have hoped for, I think, if you're a Road to Indy fan.
Yeah, definitely. It's exciting. And I think, you know, you said another new two-car team in 2022. You know, I'm hearing rumors of the return of former championship winning team to partner with a current team. And so there's could be, yep. I think there's definitely some definite uptick. And I think there's an uptick in interest from the IndyCar paddock too, right? I'm in both paddocks and I definitely see more IndyCar owners ask me about Indy Lights kids than they ever did in the past, which is huge. It's, you know, it's, they used to get maybe a couple questions a year from the IndyCar guys, IndyCar team owners, because they know I'm in the Indy Lights paddock and they understand that I get, you know, I get to see the kids' personalities and who's going to fit and who's not going to fit. But this year, you know, in particular, it's already started with people asking me, you know, hey, what's going to go on with Indy Lights? Who's going to be good? So it's exciting. I can't wait to get to St. Pete, honestly.
Steve, what a drop, Howden. Thanks for joining me this season. We'll definitely talk to you guys closer to the Road to Indy season. Merry Christmas, guys. It's always a pleasure to have you on.
Jeremy, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate it. Merry Christmas to you as well.
Yep, thank you.
Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, Charlie and I wrap up the season.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
And this is the final segment of the 2020 season. It has been an interesting season, to say the least. You know, Charlie, you know I took a risk in bringing back a podcast, and it's something you and I have been talking about for a very long time. And the pandemic, really, you know, I was told in March that I would be working from home, so my on-air stuff would all be taken from home. I'd be, you know, filling in from home. And it kind of led me to believe, well, if not now, when am I going to do this podcast? And I'll tell you what, it has been a blast to sit here and not only talk IndyCar, but talk the support series, get to learn more about F4 and FR Americas, get to learn these personalities, these kids coming up through the ranks. It has been so fun to do this over the past several months. As much as I love racing, don't get me wrong, I'm excited for this holiday break too, because it gives us a chance to reset and look forward to, you know, what could happen next year.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of looking forward to next year and to sort of put this year behind us. And you know what they say, when God closes a door, he opens a window or something like that. So I think everybody it's been a good time, as difficult as it's been, to sort of reevaluate, sort of take a break, take a breather, look around you, reevaluate where you're going in life and what's important. So with that in mind, looking forward, I think we're all kind of looking forward to hoping that next year is a better year all around than the last 10 months or so have been.
As Rob Howden alluded to, it sounds like we're going to have big support series fields. You know, even though we're in an economic downturn globally, a lot of people are starting to invest in racing. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's in the IndyCar side, if it's the SCCA Pro side. I think we're going to see some bigger fields. I'm not too worried about that. The race schedules are out for next season. I'm excited about a lot of things. You know, we're seeing some new tracks and with series. We're seeing a new series come in with the Eastern Pro 4 Championship. Nashville's going to be later on in the season. I hope to get down to Nashville. You know, it's such an interesting town, and I think that I hope that racing really works in Nashville. I know that they're a big stock car town with, you know, a couple of tracks in that market, but to have a street race, it's something that I've known that's been wanting to happen for a while. Had Champ Car stayed around, I think we would have had that opportunity to race. But I think that this racetrack that Tony Kottmann has designed it's going to be a fantastic track. It's a fantastic layout. And we're going to see something that we haven't seen too much with American street courses. We're going to see elevation changes. That excites me.
Yeah, I mean, I keep forgetting that Nashville is a thing next year. As excited as I've been about it, and as I've said many times on the show, I'm a huge fan of street circuits. I'm a city dweller by lifestyle, and to be able to go and explore a new city while attending a race is like two of my favorite things together.
So we do have some news over the next couple of months. We're working on a couple of really, really cool things. I'm excited about it. Charlie, I know you're excited about it as well. We're going to give you more mm-hmm. of a role in analysis next year. And we're going to improve too. I think that these things that we're working on behind the scenes are only going to, they're only going to make this show better. And any recommendations you have, if you're looking to help out in any way at all, please feel free to email us insideopenwheel@gmail.com. We've got, but there are a couple of big things we're waiting on through the pipeline. When we can announce those, we'll definitely announce them on our social media pages. Hopefully next year we'll have a website as well, but we're only growing. And the way we can do it too is through your word of mouth, through your retweets, you know, let us, you know, just tell people about us, because that's the one way we're going to grow is by word of mouth right now. And I know we do have some loyal listeners out there. We thank each and every one of you for listening. It means I can't believe that people still want to listen to at least my drivel.
Or mine.
Well, we're working on a Charlie mute button for some people. No, I'm kidding. No, it's
well, what can I say? You get what you pay for.
Yeah, in free 30, you know, it's kind of hard to get some features on there. But yeah, this has been a labor of love, and I'm, you know, very thankful for all of you. And I don't want this to be too sappy, but we got to look ahead to next year. Next year, we're still going to do the Legends of Indy series. We've been kind of pushing that back because we've been having some rescheduling, some news, and some interviews. But that will kick off in earnest again next year. We'll preview every series that we follow. And I think we're going to do some, if an international series comes to town, to the States, we're going to cover them. So Formula E, when they come to New York, we're going to cover them. When F1 and F3 come to Austin, we'll cover them, so on and so forth. Hopefully we'll get to a couple races next year as well. That's the plan. I know we're doing Autobahn for the Formula Race promotions when they come in September. Could we do runoffs? Possibly. There's the world's our oyster at this point. So this is going to be this year's big. Next year's going to be even bigger, I think.
Onwards and upwards.
And with that, I think it is time to end. Hopefully you enjoyed our analysis. That's only going to get better from here on out. And to all of my analysts who have joined us throughout this year, Eric Brennan, Nick Yeoman, Rob Howden, Steve Wittich, Mark Janes, I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us this year on Inside Open Wheel. And they're all going to be back next year. They've graciously given their time, and we graciously thank them from the bottom of our hearts. So for Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. Have a safe holiday season. Merry Christmas, whatever you celebrate. We hope you celebrate it with lots of family and lots of love. We'll see you next year in 2021 here on Inside Open Wheel. Take care, everybody.